What's up, After Buzzers? Welcome back to another episode of Leah Remini's Scientology and the Aftermath. Today we're going to be discussing Season 3, Episode 4, The Disappeared. We got some possible insight into the whereabouts of Shelley Miscavige, as well as learned some shocking Scientology beliefs. You're not going to want to miss it, so stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Saying she'll be back.
She'll be back, y'all.
Right? I'll be in tune with the Scientology thing.
This was your one job and you nailed it.
Absolutely nailed it.
What's up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode of Scientology in the Aftermath, the last episode of 2018.
Right?
What a way to finish this off. I'm your host, Taylor Gates. I am joined by two amazing panelists tonight.
Greetings and salutations. I'm Jackie Ray.
Hey, guys. I'm Sean Paul Payton. I'm still here.
Y'all thought
he was missing, right? But he's still with us.
He's back. This episode was... I was really excited for it, first of all, just because I think that this mystery surrounding Shelley Miscavige and her disappearance, like she hasn't been seen or heard from in a decade, is just insane. There's a lot of scandals in this organization, but I think this is one of like the major mysteries and scandals, and a lot of what the media focuses on. What were your guys' overall thoughts on it?
You know, I'm past the shock value now. Mm. Now everything, I just go into it like, what little titillating tidbit are we going to get? And we got one piece that we'll definitely tell you in just a moment that I was like, what? For like a minute. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, I think the more that I watch, the scarier it becomes because, like, you know, we talked about in episode 2 how I was going to present the perspective of somebody that's like a Scientologist. And shout out to everybody that commented on that episode, too. Y'all did not like anything from the Scientology perspective. And I got to let y'all know, thank you for those comments, because to be completely real, yes, you're right. Like, it's insane how, like, the thing that is just crushing is that the breaking apart families, the stalking, the harassing people, like, all that is just wrong. And I think that using church as a way to manipulate people through fear, that is also wrong.
So it's gotten a little bit more real for you.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it absolutely has. Mm-hmm. And, like, I just wanted to see what people would say. And, like, they were saying everything that just made sense. Like, everything you guys made sense. And
so welcome back to the real world.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's crazy how, like, just being in something like that, you can be trapped in fear and be afraid to speak out. But, like, when you come to the realization that there's a lot of harm being done, you can't just sit silent.
Yeah.
And that's what these people are going through.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that is kind of a lot about what the show is all about, especially with Leah being the one hosting, because she was in it for so long and she was so passionate about it. And we kind of learned throughout this episode that she actually played a pretty big role in this whole sort of what went down with Shelley Miscavige and the missing persons report and things like that. So just starting off to give everyone a little bit of background, the thing that really kind of set off this hunt and this sort of mystery having to do with Shelley was when two of, you know, Scientology sort of celebrities, Tom Cruise, married...
No, not sort of.
He is the celebrity. Well, Katie Holmes isn't really anymore, obviously, but Tom Cruise, you're right, definitely still currently is. But they got married in a lavish ceremony in this Italian castle, you know, very... I mean, this place has money, so they're going to invest it in whatever makes them look good and what gives them positive attention. However, the one thing that was very fishy about that was the fact that Shelley didn't show up. And Leah was the only person that said something. Mm-hmm. Were you guys surprised that she was the only one to ask that? Because I feel like that's such a common question.
I don't think so. I don't think that, because as we've seen time and time and time again with this show, is you're indoctrinated. You don't question authority. You don't question authority. So I think people probably noticed. I don't think that Leah was the only one who noticed Shelley wasn't there. I don't think she's the only one who cared that she wasn't there. Mm. I just think that she was the only one whose friendship was... So that the friendship was important to her, so she's the only one who said something. She's the only one who verbalized it. Because I can't imagine being at a wedding where I just know somebody I care about is supposed to be there and looking around and they're not there. And then still being able to say, but I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah. And not only is she like her friend, she's an important figure in this organization.
Right.
So it's crazy that she's not there. Like, that's so noticeable. She's one of the, you know, like, mouthpieces of it, being married to David, who's, like, the leader of the whole thing.
It's especially when crazy. They said that that was one of their times where they... We know about all the stresses that come with being a Scientologist, but one mm-hmm. of the things everyone seemed to said was, we love weddings, because mm-hmm. that's kind of the time where you can let your hair down, you
it's
can party
their break
a little bit.
From
it's the break.
The work that they're always doing.
Yeah. Exactly.
For like, sure.
Yeah. And for her to not be there, it was just odd.
Yeah, and this kind of actually spiraled, like, quite a lot. It was one of the primary reasons that Leah actually left Scientology, because she was like, you know, this is really fishy. I'm not, you know, not trusting this organization anymore. And it sort of set off, like, shifting the media coverage, because the media before this, I don't think, had really covered it a whole lot, or covered, like, of course, the celebrity aspects and things. And this is where, in 2006, it kind of started to change, because they were asking, where is this person? Like,
yeah.
This is a really big deal. And lots of people started leaving. Lots of the very important people in the organization, the very high ups. Were you surprised this is what it took to make them leave?
I mean, we understand cult culture, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And we understand that it's going to take... I love what Tom said, where he was like, you know, I can take you in there. I can show you the abuse. I can show you the sleeping bag they're sleeping in. I can show you the whole... It's not going to matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, they're going to say, we're here of our own free will. We're here because we want to be. So I think that's just part of the scenario.
Yeah, it's the group thinking that happens in a situation like that is just amazing, because everyone's will is just tied to the church. And it's like, when you take away your ability to be educated from any source outside of the church, then it's almost like there is no other way of thinking.
Yeah, definitely. And then, of course, you know, the minute Leah does this, she gets slammed. And there's even, like, a press release that comes out saying that Leah is obsessed with them and that she stalked them and everything. And I don't think anyone here was surprised about that. That's just, like,
not
pretty much
a little bit, no.
standard tactics. Before we jump into Shelley Miscavige's, like, early life, which I found really fascinating, let's tell you guys a little bit about AfterBuzz and all the awesome stuff we do here.
Alrighty, guys. Well, hey, AfterBuzzers, our network produces after shows for nearly all of your favorite TV shows. From dramas, reality TV, sci-fi, and more, there is no network that works harder to serve television fans. But we need your help. We're asking that you please subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels. By subscribing to our channel, YouTube will suggest content that's tailor-made for you, and you'll help AfterBuzz continue to grow. And if you're worried about pesky notifications, don't be, because they're optional. So hit the subscribe button now for this channel and check out our other AfterBuzz YouTube channels as well. Let us know you did so in the comments, and we'll thank you on air. For now, thanks for being the best fans and for helping us be the ESPN of TV talk.
Thank you guys so much. Yeah, we're on YouTube, we're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, we're everywhere. Make sure to leave a comment, give us a thumbs up, give us 5 stars, you know.
Subscribe.
All the good stuff. Yeah, subscribe.
Hit that notification bell.
All the stuff, because we love hearing what you guys think, and I think this is a really important conversation to have, so we love it when you guys engage.
Yes.
So let's go back and talk a little bit about Shelley's early life, because they interviewed a woman named Janice Gillam Grady, who was a very, you know, dear friend of Shelley's from childhood. And they talked a lot about the Commodores and Messengers, which is, if I'm reading it correctly and, you know, hearing it correctly, it's essentially like the Sea Org. And then they integrated children as young as like 12 in it. And they were on a ship called the Apollo. And we've heard a lot about the Sea Org in past seasons, but we focus, like, mainly on the adults. Like, we interviewed some, you know, people who were raised there as children, but we got a really in-depth look of it, I feel like, in this episode, talking to Janice. What did you guys think about how that whole organization worked and how that structure kind of was aboard the Apollo?
I found it troubling. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone's surprised by that, but yeah. I just wonder how we would view that now. You know, I know this happened in the early 70s, but can a grown man right now today say, I'm going to bring a bunch of teenage kids, and some of them were even as young as
There's 10, 11, 12. There's no way that would fly today.
I'm just, sure it's right? still happening, though.
I'm positive it is, but to the level that it was happening then, and then in such a, like, bold way that this is what it is, I'm going to save the planet by forcing these children to alienate their parents and start viewing me as their father. That is, to me, I mean, we haven't heard any of that, like, maybe there was some sexual misconduct going on, but I'm sure it was on the cusp, because why are you surrounding yourself with a bunch of kids? Like, what do you have in common with these kids except for the fact that they're more easy to manipulate? Yeah. That's it. It's the only reason.
I think it's cruel for kids to be stripped away from their parents. I just don't like that at all. The thing with the Father's Day, it just, I felt disturbed. Mm. I just am so caught in my head from this episode.
You do look like you're just like, I don't know what to do right now. You have that look on your face.
Yeah. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, and not only do they kind of strip them away from their parents, but also something that we've learned a lot through this series and through other, you know, cult documentaries that I've seen at least, is just not giving them the resources that they need if they ever would want to leave. So they didn't teach them any, like, valuable life skills. Like, they're teaching them
geography, science, yeah, nothing math.
Like that. Like, they're teaching them things about the ship, and they're teaching them Scientology, which is, like,
which, again, is genius. I know I keep revisiting that, but it's genius, because if you are indoctrinating these kids to believe that you are saving the planet, then what is the use of any of the rest of the world's education? How is that even useful? If every one of us outside of Scientology have done such a bang-up job destroying the planet, why would you need to learn anything that we learn?
The overboard thing was just maddening, too. I can't imagine, like, throwing kids off of a boat, like,
and locking them in closets, like, that's
like abuse. Like,
I prefer to be locked in a closet. I am terrified of heights. If you'd have thrown me over the side of that, I would have died.
They said
I would have died. I would have had a heart attack on the way down. It wouldn't have worked.
And what a culture of fear they're kind of just, like, cultivating there. Like, Janice was saying that she would hear screaming when they're coming off. Like, that's terrifying. Like, that would give you nightmares. Yeah.
I do find it very, you know, heroic, I guess. Or maybe that's not the right word, but it's interesting to me that of all the adults that we've met that were basically raised in Scientology, that they now have children, that none of them, because, you know, we've heard time and time and time again that sometimes when kids see their parents abused, then they grow up and be abusers, or mm-hmm. they grow up and be victims of abuse.
Yeah.
But we've seen quite the opposite in this situation. We've seen parents that overwhelmingly just want to shower their kids with love because were neglected of that love. So I find that very interesting, and that's applauding. That's very applauding.
That's a really good point. I had never really thought about that, but you're right. Everyone, at least that we've seen on the show, has really kind of had a very positive attitude about it coming out and mm-hmm. gone on to raise, like, really seemingly healthy and, you know, sort of normal families despite growing up in these circumstances. So I think, thank you for pointing that out, because I think that's really true. Moving on a little bit, just to Shelley's sort of teen life, this is when she started to meet David Miscavige, which is kind of what she's, you know, best known for, obviously, being his wife. So they met when they were on a base together in La Quinta, and they were both 16 years old. And I thought it was interesting that they pointed out how it was such a small group of people that they were, like, three or four people the same age.
Almost like it's an arranged marriage. Like, this is just what it's going to be.
That's a really good way to put it. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think of that? Just the fact that it's so small.
Yeah, I think that, you know, some of that is by design. And definitely if you want Scientologists to stick with Scientologists, that's the best way to do it. Keep the circle small.
Right.
The one high point of that is I really enjoyed the pictures where they just seem like kids, where he wanted to drive up to see her.
Yeah,
she wanted to drive down to see him.
It was nice.
Yeah. And I loved that part, but then I felt like, oh, how sad. Like, you had this moment mm-hmm. where you could have had this normal little first teenage love and it could have turned into something beautiful or not. You know, we all go through that at that age, and they were just robbed of that opportunity. I felt bad for both of them for a second until I remembered who David was. And then it's like, I don't feel bad for you.
But I agree, though. And, I mean, you never know. Like, power sort of has the tendency to corrupt people. So mm-hmm. maybe when he started moving up high in the church, he started to sort of change. Because I thought that was really sweet, too. I was like, oh, they seem to really just have like cared about each other. Yeah.
And my first crush, you know, everybody. I remember my first crush.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. But, you know, obviously, sadly, we didn't get that for long because we start talking to Tom DeVoe, who was a former Sea Org exec. He was also another very high-ranking member who worked really closely with Shelly. And he said something surprising. He said that he's surprised that she lasted that long. Were you guys, like, what did you think about him saying that and that sort of viewpoint?
She... In her position, I guess it's like they were saying in the episode, if she were to say something about David Miscavige, then she could be, they would report on her, versus if somebody were to say something about David Miscavige that was bad to her, then she could report on them. So,
like, it's a two-edged sword.
It's a very damning cycle.
Yeah.
I thought Tom kind of nailed it Tom and Leah, when I don't even really think I understood it. I mean, I understood it, but I don't think I fully understood it until Leah said today, where, because Tom said he had a brother that said that Shelly loved him. And Leah's face was just like, oh, that's not a thing. You don't have empathy. You don't have compassion. That's not a thing. So once they said that, then I understood what he meant. Because honestly, when he first said, I'm surprised she lasted this long, I was like, what do you mean? They're all indoctrinated to last that long. But then the second he said that, then that doesn't fit with the mole. You know, that doesn't fit with the whole... Because if you have compassion for somebody, then when you see them being abused, you're going to have to do something. Mm-hmm. And then he went on to say that there was times when David was literally beating the hell out of someone. She's like, David, stop. And that's not your position. You're supposed to support him in all of his decision, everything he does. You're not supposed to question him. So to... I think that was kind of an interesting viewpoint of his to say that she just had so much compassion that he was surprised she lasted that long.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I am surprised that she lasted as long and didn't have the same thought process as others we've seen in the show. Like, at some point she didn't say, okay, do I have to jump into the back of a car just to get out of this, you know?
Yeah, she seems to be in this sort of interesting middle space that we haven't seen a lot of. Like, we've seen really hardcore people who are like 100% on David's side, and then you're right, we've seen people who have been interviewed on the show who are very much like trying to get out by any means necessary. And she kind of takes that really interesting, like, she's kind of an enigma in that way, because she would sort of stand by at times and I guess let it happen, but she never fully participated in what he was doing too. So it's like a really sort of interesting space that she kind of occupied, and it just makes it really fascinating.
I wonder if she like has tried to get out and has just tried to go through exit interviews, and then somewhere along that route she ends up getting stopped, and then they're just like, you know, here, read these books, make sure that you're thinking the right way, and then it just reinforces that belief back into Scientology before she can get out.
That's a good point, because she does seem like somebody who just wouldn't go AWOL. She wouldn't just leave. She would want to do things the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And like Tom said, they're not going to let that happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a good point.
You're right. And even on the small chance that, like, she actually did want to get out, they were saying, you know, there's way too much at stake because she is so, you know, deep into this and does know so many of the secrets. And there's fear that she could be contacted by law enforcement, like get subpoenaed and have to kind of talk or risk going to jail, obviously. And then also the fear that she's going to talk internally and kind of start this mutiny. And they said if anyone could do it, it would be her, and she might be the only one that could do it.
Hmm.
What were your thoughts hearing that?
I think that's a more realistic fear than her talking to law enforcement, because I don't know what it's actually called, but I know that there's some sort of law or some sort of statute that says if you're married, you don't have to testify against
privilege.
That person. Yeah, so you don't. So I think David's smart enough to know that that's not a real thing. I think the more in his face fear tactic is how can she make others see me in a true light? How can she make others see that what I'm doing is wrong? Because if that were to happen, the whole religion would crumble.
Yeah. That's true.
I know for our podcast listeners, you can't really see what's going on, but I love Sean's face right now. He came in and like, oh no, that's what we heard from the whole time we were watching it. He's in a different place than when you guys first met him. So
yep.
Give him some love, y'all. Show him some love. He's going to need it.
It's one shock right after the other.
He wasn't ready.
He wasn't ready. One story kind of finishing up, you know, our whole section with Tom and our whole interview with Tom, was the story he shared about David sort of, quote unquote, losing his mind, which I didn't quite know what to make of. But apparently he said that one time Shelley heard him, and also he heard David sort of, David was like, what do we do with the gold? And all of this, like, stuff that wasn't quite
That was very confusing.
Yeah, how did you read that? Like, did you think that he just is, like, not quite all there? Or, like, what do you think was happening in that moment?
I wonder if he read, like, because he's clearly going to the highest level you can go. I wonder if he was talking about some sort of top secret LRH document that nobody else knows about. And, like, he was, like, speaking to himself out loud. And nobody else knows whatever it is that he knows, actually.
Maybe I just watched too many crime shows, but I just took it as, oh, he's setting her up. He's setting her up to make it look like she stole the gold. So then that way he can justify whatever comes next for her.
Interesting.
Wait a second. So hence her disappearance?
Yeah, because if she's betrayed, like if they have, because, you know, they showed like they have this special kind of, you know, all this gold and special technology, the stainless steel that they're writing their stuff on. So what if by saying it, where did we put it? Where, and now he's put it, he said that where other people can hear it.
Yeah.
So it's, and then Tom even said she turned white when he said it. So now in my head, again, I watch a lot of crime shows, y'all. So I just thought it was his way of setting her up to take the fall. So then that way he can say, see, Shelley did blah, 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 blah.
Because after that, she disappeared.
So that's how I took it. Clearly, that's not what happened. Huh. But I took it as he trying to set my girl up.
Interesting. Because I was like, I don't really know. I just kind of assumed it was like simpler than that. It was just like, oh, he's not all quite there. But I mean, those are both really interesting sort of like pitches.
And this would be a good point for you guys to comment on, like say what you think on this
one. What did that mean? That was like a really interesting moment. Because
he's had opportunities, you know, when they built that center to preserve Elrond's word from nuclear blast, he could have
next planet,
right? Sent from to the universe and beyond. Oh, no, wait, to infinity and beyond. Sorry,
so the Toy Story. Right.
I had to take a moment, but he had an opportunity to say, I mean, even if she had been under duress, even if he had to force her into doing it, I feel like if she was still alive, he would have forced her to say, "You're gonna do this promotional video." So people can see you.
Well, let's just talk about the whole sort of present day. What's going on with her? What do people think is going on with her? So something interesting was introduced in this episode called the CST, which is the Church of Spiritual Technology. Mm-hmm. And there are rumors from certain sources that they think that Shelley might be there or has been there sort of in the past. We got that not only from her friends said that, but you know, they kind of have it on record from different sources that the security team Talon was sort of hired to make sure that was all sort of on lock and that Shelley didn't leave that place. And Mike actually went there to sort of see the whole, you know, compound or whatever you call it.
Yeah, he introduced himself and everything.
Yep. I thought that was so funny. Yeah. Like, tell the CEO that Mike Render says hi.
Tell him who? Like, you just gave yourself away, dude. Just be like, I don't know who you're talking about.
No, they're so savage. Like, they don't care. That's what I love so much about the hosts of the show, because they just genuinely don't care.
They don't.
Like,
it's amazing.
But that compound was crazy. Like, there are fences, and it's not just a wrought iron fence. Like, it has, like, stakes coming out of the top and spikes coming out. Yeah. There's cameras everywhere. There's license plate readers. The second someone drives past, there's someone with a camera across the street. I mean, I personally wasn't surprised just because I know the lengths these people go to, but did any of that even, like, shock you?
Not even a little bit. I think I became slightly sad because there was a part of me that was like, dang, you know what? If she is in there, I hope she's not alone. Because that would drive you insane if you're just in the
solitary confinement for
10 years. That would drive her bonkers. I mean, unless, again, that's your end goal. So then when she comes out, everything she says just sounds bonkers. But how sad would that be if she's in there by herself?
It'd be devastating. I mean, it's literally prison, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, no contact with the outside world. Not even her other Scientologists. It's torturous.
I do find it odd that no one has even questioned David, because he's still appearing with his wedding ring on. And no one? No one wants to know?
Yeah.
Well, it's that, I guess it's that powerful, like the reinforcement of the beliefs within there.
Mm. Yeah, let's dive a little bit more into the sort of belief that they touched on this episode. That was a huge surprise, I think, for all of us. We were like, what? Oh my gosh, that makes sense. And even Leah was like pretty surprised in this episode. But a lot of the reason why they stay is because they believe that L. Ron Hubbard is actually going to be resurrected, which I found mind-blowing. Like, I had no idea that was something that they sort of subscribed their beliefs to, but I guess it makes a lot of sense and, like, obviously makes this, you know, loyalty so much stronger if you think that someone you do believe in is coming back, even if you don't necessarily think that David Miscavige is, like, the right leader. But there's a lot of sort of evidence to support that that is something that they all think. Like, there have been 6 houses built in the U.S., like, under L. Ron Hubbard's guides, like, in case that he returns, like, for his second life. And Sean, you had another sort of fact about this for us, correct?
Yeah, I had been to, you know, several different organizations, Scientology buildings, and in each one they do have a chair with his hat and his materials waiting for when he does return. So,
do you know how he's going to return? Like, he's just going to reappear, or is it going to be like a...
I realize how ignorant I am to this religion, because I, seeing them be in it for like 30 some years, and the fact that I was only in it for 2, but from the little bit that I know, I guess it would have to do with the Thetan energy. Like, so the Thetans, however many Thetans there are in each body, that must have dispersed when he died and left his body, and somehow they're going to come back. I don't know how they say it comes back, like whether it's like a newborn baby from some other unrelated person or what, but I don't know. Comment if you guys know any more details on that.
I mean, because, you know, with my Christian background, when the second they said that, I was like, what? Because, but then I had to take a beat and realize when I was a Christian, and that justified everything for me. You know, believing in the second coming and looking at the world and all the atrocities that are going on in it and being able to say, yeah, but it's okay, because when he returns, you know, everything, like, it just, it really does make life a little bit better, to be honest. It makes it a little easier. Now, I don't think that I could see all kinds of hell being raised in the religion and say, yeah, but it's okay. So I think that's a really, really interesting turn of events to be able to say, okay, I know the leader that we have now is beating us, you know, we don't know what's happened to his wife, he's doing all of these really shady things. I don't know if I would rely on the man who created the shady things, who had children that he, and then at one point they said he wanted to start adopting people from orphanages at like 10,
yeah,
just because he knew they didn't have family already, and he just had all these sick and twisted things. So I don't know if that would be, I feel like you have to be indoctrinated in it from church, from when you're small. Because otherwise, like Janice said, she had a guy that was 21 years old when he came in. So he just didn't have that long-standing history. So he was able to go, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. Like, I looked into it when I was in my 20s, and I had enough people that were already outside. I had a college education and enough sense to finally understand after a couple of years, like, seeing everything that you guys are talking about. And, like, from what my friends would try to say when I would go into the church and actually talk about it to, like, the people that were there to help me in Scientology, they would say, well, you can't look at all that stuff on the internet, and that's just oppressive people talking, and you can't listen to your friends because if they attack the words of LRH, then they're just oppressive too. So that there you go. Then there's...
Which probably doesn't sound truthful when you're older. But when you're a child and it's all you know,
right, exactly. Right.
You know, especially if
the,
you know,
impression right. of their mind.
And the fact that they looked up to him as a father figure, I think that's just so, the saddest part and like the most impactful. Because of course, if you're like essentially raised by this guy and he's the only parental, even like type of figure that you have, like,
then you have that attachment.
And you're going to make excuses and you're going to, just like do everything you can so that doesn't go away, because you don't want to lose that hope, and you don't want to admit to yourself that that is probably not true. So it's just a really sad situation, and it's just crazy how it all comes together, honestly.
I did think it was interesting how Janice said that Shelley made it, she went out of her way to make sure she was going to be Elrond's best servant, basically. And that's an interesting dynamic for me to say that I'm going to look at another human being and say that it is my goal to be subservient to this person. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting mindset. But
I don't think she thought of it as subservancy, though.
I don't think she did. But at some point, you got to know, ain't nobody doing this for me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Nobody's serving me. Like, I just feel like the light bulb would go off. But back to Tom's point where he was like, maybe she really is okay and doesn't want to leave, because if she really believes that Elrond is the end all be all, then maybe she just is waiting for him to come rescue her, mm-hmm. basically.
That's a good point. It's really interesting, and I so hope that we get answers sooner rather than later, because right. it's such an intriguing sort and I hope of mystery.
She, even though I don't in my heart, but I hope she's alive, because I would just love to hear what she has to say.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see it unroll and unravel, and I think that this show is doing so much sort of in this realm and bringing so much attention to it. I think it's only a matter of time, to be honest with you. Like, things are actually, I think, changing. Like, we're getting closer to the truth, and it's really making a big difference. So I'm excited to see sort of what kind of answers we get. And I'm scared, I'm horrified, but yeah. I'm also excited because it's so just interesting to watch. Let's move on to our special segment.
Let's,
you guys,
let's do it.
All right, so each week we kind of bring up a very powerful figure who is still in Scientology, just because we know that the celebrity impact is like huge with this organization and is kind of a big part of drawing people in and keeping people in. So this week we have a very, very influential figure, Elizabeth Moss. She's like huge right now because of The Handmaid's Tale, but she's also known for movies like Girl Interrupted and, of course, the show Mad Men, which she won a ton of awards for and has been Emmy nominated like every year for the past like 2 decades or something. That's exaggerating, but she's, you know, she's very much in Hollywood and a really powerful and important figure. But she was actually raised in Scientology, so she, from very young, she was sort of in this, you know, in this organization. And I found a really interesting fact was that people have actually sort of confronted her about it before, like her fans, and she once took to Instagram after a fan asked her whether her role in The Handmaid's Tale made her think about her involvement in the Church of Scientology, because her fans like, hey, there's, you know,
similarities
here. And she took to Instagram to defend her beliefs, saying that, you know, she's open to, you know, religious tolerance and all this stuff, and just really defended the organization, which is interesting considering we have a lot of people not defending it anymore, but we also still have a lot of people in it.
So is she out or is she in?
She's in. Yep.
I definitely, because there's a specific scene that in The Handmaid's Tale when her mad, whatever she is, tries to confront her husband for not allowing her, because women can't read in this time, and he cuts her fingers off.
Mm. Yeah.
So I'm in my head, if she, I would love to just sit down and pick her brain. Like, how can you play this role where you do have to be subservient to the leader and not have a light bulb? Not a light bulb. That's just weird.
Yeah, I don't know. But there is, I think, a lot of differences many times between, like, the very powerful people in Scientology versus sort of the layman. You know what I mean? Like, right. There's special treatment and things like that, but it is definitely interesting, and there is, like, a huge celebrity culture surrounding it. Let's move on to some slightly more uplifting news that you found.
I just want you guys to know I went out of my way to do this for... Ooh, got the news. I always want to do the wavy lines when we do that. But this is specifically for Sean, because I was like, I need to find some positivity that these Scientologists have done, and I had to look for a long time. But there are several things in our country that need a revamp. I think we can all agree to that. One of those being prison reform, and there is a bill on the table. It's called the First Step Act, and without getting into the good, bad, and the ugly of the bill, it just wants to basically redo prison. It wants to push forward with prison reform, and some of the things that they want to do is they want to make sure pregnant women aren't in restraints, because, you know, that could hurt them, that could hurt the baby. They want to have the Compassionate Release Act for people who are about to die, so they don't have to die in prison. Mm-hmm. Just a whole caveat of things, including, you know, not having the mandatory sentencing, which is a big deal. And one of the people who is heading up this much-needed change is a man named John Strand, who is the National Director of Social Betterment Programs and Policy for the Church of Scientology. His office is based in Washington, and he has been a Scientologist for more than 40 years, and he is also a member of the Interfaith Criminal Justice Coalition that's is really pushing to change the way our criminal justice system works.
Wow.
So, I mean, kudos to you. That's a much needed thing. And I did that for you, Sean.
That's 1 point.
Well, that's really interesting because we do hear a lot about the bad, but there are a lot of, you know, good people who have left Scientology. And I'm sure there are, like, I mean, Shelley Miscavige was. I don't. We don't know.
We gotta stop talking about her in the past tense.
Yeah, but it's interesting because it's like there's no necessarily black and white when it comes to individuals. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, this organization has impacted negatively a lot of lives, but that doesn't necessarily mean every single person in it is a horrible person.
I don't think any. To be fair, I think everyone in it is slightly crazy, but I don't think that I would go so far to say that I think they're bad people. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, if you really believe that what you're doing has the slightest possibility to make the world a better place, then regardless of what you're doing, you're coming from a good place. You're coming from a place of sincerity, and you want to believe that you can make things better for your fellow man. So yeah. I don't think that I would inherently think Scientologists are bad.
Oh, for sure. For
I wouldn't
sure.
trust them around the corner, but no.
So this show is obviously a documentary series, so we don't have a whole lot of predictions, and I don't really think we got a promo for this episode either, but I do predict that we'll be back in 2019.
Boom.
Yes, I know the newest episode of this airs on January 1st, however, AfterBuzz Studios will not be open yet, so we will figure out, you know, our best course of action after that, but we will be back in 2019, so
can I make
don't
a
fret.
Request?
Sure.
At 2019... We're all here doing this Scientology after buzz.
Yeah.
In 2019, can I
that's
get you to go?
Resolution. No, I will not go. I will not go to the next
finish.
Well,
it.
That's all the time we have. Guys, where can they find you to continue these conversations?
She just cut me off, y'all. But I'm Jackie Ray. You can follow me on all things social media at JRayTheFanatic.
And I'm Sean Paul Payton. You can find me on all social media as @SeanPaulPayton.
And you guys can find me on Twitter @Elphaba_Anne and on Instagram @Taylor_Gates_. We will see you guys in 2019. Have wonderful holidays and a very happy new year.
Feliz Navidad.
Happy holidays.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.